Good evening, everyone. Going to be turning to Revelation chapter 14. We want to continue in our series, studying through Revelation. I'm sure you probably have picked up on at least two themes from the book of Revelation as we've studied through so far. One will be victory, and the other is hope. I think each lesson, as we study through, especially the sevens, is a message of hope. And tonight is no different. Tonight we look at seven voices of hope. Seven voices of hope. It happens pretty frequently to the Apostle John while he's on the Isle of Patmos, that he heard voices. We find numerous passages where he heard voices like a trumpet, back in chapter 1, verse 10, chapter 4, verse 1, where he heard a voice of many waters, chapter 1 again, verse 15, chapter 14, verse 2, as we read just a moment ago. A voice of thunder as well in this same chapter, as well as later in chapter 19, back into chapter 10, chapter 6, you'll find a voice of thunder. And so these voices that John would hear certainly were voices of hope, voices of victory, sometimes voices of judgment. But tonight, our lesson deals with voices of hope. In fact, in the book of Revelation, 42 times the word voice or voices are used. And 25% of those are found right here in this one chapter. So this is a good bulk of that, those words that are being used. Seven voices. The first one that we find here, verses 1 through 5. And we'll just pick up and start reading each of these voices as they're broken down by verses. So verses 1 through 5, voice number 1. Then I looked, and behold, a lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his Father's name written in their foreheads, or on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, like the voice of many waters, the voice of loud thunder. I heard the sound of harpists playing their harps. They sang, as it were, a new song before the throne, and before the four living creatures and the elders, and no one could learn that song except the 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. These are the ones who were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These were redeemed from among men, being first fruits to God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no deceit, for they are without fault before the throne of God. The first of seven voices came from this great number of voices who were singing together, this 144,000, singing a song of hope, according to verse 1. These were the ones that in chapter 7 were the ones who were sealed, ones who were literally authenticated as faithful. These were martyrs who refused the demands of emperor worship, to bow down to the emperor. And so they did not have that mark on them. They didn't have that name on their forehead or on their wrist. And so they wore their father's name instead of Domitian. In other words, the name that's indicated by the name of the beast in chapter 13. You remember the end of chapter 13, it says, he was granted power to them to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And so in that guild, they had to be a part of that guild, and so they were, if they were going to do that, they had to wear this particular name. And in so doing, then they could buy and sell and go about their marketplace adventures, if you will. But the point being is that we're reading of those who were singing in heaven, those who the 144,000 would represent, the martyrs of God who did not wear the name of Domitian. They did not bow down to the beast as was demanded of them back in chapter 7, verses 3 through 17. Their song that they would sing was one that was one of comfort, one that would comfort also the persecuted who were still behind. And so the martyrs were singing out this voice, and John hears this, this song that they sing, this song of comfort. They sing in the presence of Jesus, and so they knew the bliss of His care. One of the other things I think that it's that we should point out is that throughout the book of Revelation is we find the care that Jesus has for His family, for the church. And I think that's an overwhelming thing that you'll find really in each chapter is the care, the concern, the love that He has for His church. You go back to the teaching of Jesus when He talked about, inasmuch as you've done it to the one of these little ones, you've done it unto Me. He felt that pain of those who had been martyred for the cause. He felt the pain of those who were being persecuted for His cause as well. He cares for them, He loves them, and certainly He will avenge them, as we'll find in later chapters. The second thing that we notice about this song is that they sang on Mount Zion, a place figuratively known and associated then with God's care for His people. Going back to Psalm 14, Psalm 20, Psalm 48, and so on. But here in Revelation 14 and verse 1, you find the Lamb, behold, a Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with Him the 144,000 having His Father's name written on their foreheads, and they're singing out this song. Third thing that we pick up here is that the song that they sang was a new song, a description that's used typically in Scripture for a new song was a new day of praise, a new day of joy. And so this was a new song that was being sung, praising God, rejoicing together for His help that He has provided for them. They sang, as it were, a new song before the throne. We find then voice number 2, verses 6 and 7. Then I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation, tribe, tongue, and people, and saying with a loud voice, fear God, give glory to Him, for the hour of His judgment has come, and worship Him who has made heaven and earth, the sea and the springs of water. And another angel followed, saying, Babylon is fallen. So we'll get there to the second one here in just a moment, but what do you pick up here in this? You see an angel that is flying, and this the second of seven voices that are given is this angel preaching a message of hope to those who were left behind, to those who were still on earth, to those who needed that gospel. This was a message of courage and hope for them, a commandment to be obedient to God, to be faithful to Him. You go back to Revelation 5, verse 9, they sang a new song, saying, You are worthy to take the scroll. This is when they were praising the Lamb of God, Jesus, the one who could open those scrolls, to open its seals. You were slain and have redeemed us to God by Your blood out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation. And so directly connected to that, you see this phrase keep coming up. Chapter 11, verse 9, you see it again. Then those from the peoples and tribes and tongues and nations, we'll see their dead bodies for 3.5 days and not allow their dead bodies to be put in graves. Chapter 13, verse 7, it was granted of them to make war unto the saints and to overcome them, and authority was given Him over every tribe, nation, people, and tongue. And so that's Revelation 13 and verse 7. So we find that phrase being used very often in John's writing here. And so ultimately, who's he talking about? If you go back to verse 6, you find that this angel was preaching, the angel just simply meaning a messenger here. This messenger was preaching a message, the everlasting gospel. In other words, the death, burial, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, about His kingdom, about those things concerning the kingdom. The everlasting gospel was preached to those who were on earth, every nation, tribe, tongue, and people. Well, certainly then, who would that include? it certainly would include then those Roman citizens. They certainly would need to hear that message. And so, especially for those Romans then who were now being taught two things. According to verse 7, they were taught to fear God and to revere God. And going back, mentioning Steve's class this morning, where we were talking about that fear, that respect, that awe for God. And so he was to receive their allegiance, not the emperor. And so there was a message being preached to those who were there still in Rome, a message of called the everlasting gospel, by the way. And so this also is how we as Christians need to realize that we rule beside Christ even now because we follow the King, and therefore we rule alongside Him. And accordingly, this good news message was that which was implicitly encouraging Christians to maintain their faithfulness, to not give in to that decree and that rule, to bow down before Domitian, the ruler of that day. When we get to verse 8, we find voice number 3. Another angel followed, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drink of the wine of her wrath of fornication. The third of seven voices comes from this messenger again with an announcement of hope, a message of hope. The fall of Rome, that certainly would bring Christians some hope, right? Thinking about their oppressor now going down, that there was going to be victory. There was going to be, God was going to avenge them ultimately and take this oppressor from upon them. And you think about going back to our Old Testaments, you think about Nebuchadnezzar's empire. Of course, Nebuchadnezzar's empire, Babylon, was used to come against the southern kingdom. They would defeat the Assyrians, who had defeated the northern kingdom. And so the Babylonians then were in power, and God would use King Nebuchadnezzar to come upon the southern kingdom of Judah and take them away, but not without first pronouncing judgment upon them as well. And so you have Isaiah 21 and verse 9. And so this is before all this happens with the Babylonians. And look, here comes a chariot of men with a pair of horsemen. Then he answered and said, Babylon is fallen, and the carved images of her gods he has broken down to the ground. Nebuchadnezzar had this ego about him that would be brought, he'd be brought low, right? In Daniel chapter 4. And after he makes this statement like this, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? Clearly it was not. God rules in the kingdoms of men, and that point was made very clear. And so the demise of his empire was so certain that some 200 years prior to it happening, Isaiah could say without a doubt, Babylon is fallen. Well, Babylon wasn't even in power at the time. And so it's with that same type of certainty that we read in the book of Revelation where John is able to see this and to have this message, this messenger, the first one coming with the everlasting gospel, the second one coming with a message of hope, basically saying that Babylon is fallen. Well, he's not talking about Babylon of old. Babylon of old is already gone. The Medes and the Persians took care of him. The Greeks took care of them. The Romans took care of them. And so now who is it? It's Rome that's in charge. And so the Roman Empire was going to fall. And so this message, this voice certainly is a message of hope. Voice number 4, verses 9 through 12. A third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in his image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation, his anger. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of his holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever. They have no rest day or night who worship the beast in his image, and whoever receives the mark of his name Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. And so the fourth of seven voices came from yet another messenger, another angel, with a warning. And this one is kind of two-sided. This is both a warning, but also includes a message of hope. To those, obviously, who are faithful, it's a message of hope. To those who are not, it's a warning. The Romans were warned to turn from worshiping the images of their emperor or experience the full wrath of God. Notice that language. He himself, verse 10, will drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which he has poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. It's flowery language, but what it does, it tells us that what he is trying to say is that with the very full power, they are going to be punished. They are going to be tormented in eternity with fire and brimstone. And the smoke of their torment will ascend forever and ever. And there's your picture of eternity. No rest day or night for those who worship the beast in his image. And so, not only then was the Roman Empire doomed, the Romans who would fail to repent, they would be condemned literally by this word wrath. It's directly connected to a word that we talk about sometimes, and we've talked about really throughout the summer, the word passion, with the very passion of God. He is going to be passionate about their punishment, is what this word wrath is being used here. The indignation, literally this slow-boiling, settled anger that is directed in one particular location, and it will be with those who were unfaithful, those who have bowed down to the emperor. The condemnation of God, that torment, an eternal flame and brimstone and smoke. Such was to be accomplished in the very presence of the holy angels and of the Lamb, as if they are literally there supervising what was going to take place. This prediction was designed, though, to offer patience. For every child of God who's ever been, who's ever gone through any kind of trial, affliction, any kind of suffering, this is a message of patience, a message of endurance, hanging on, not giving in, not giving up. And so we find then, verse 13, voice number 5. Then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, their works follow them. The fifth of seven voices came from the Holy Spirit, who has, if you will, a eulogy of hope, a message of hope. It's almost like a funeral dirge, because we hear this so often, especially at funerals. But it is a message of hope, a eulogy of hope, a promise to those faithful to God who die in the Lord. Literally, they have rest from their labors. Now, we use this passage very often talking about our works here on earth. But literally, contextually, this is probably their beatings is what's being talked about and discussed in this particular passage. They have rest from their beatings. And the reputation of their work that they have done, it goes with them. God knows. Voice number 6, verses 14 through 16. Then I looked, and behold, a white cloud, and a cloud sat one, sat on one like the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, in his hand a sharp sickle. Another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him who sat on the cloud, thrust in your sickle and reap, for the time has come for you to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. So he who sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. Sixth of seven voices came from yet another angel, sounding a charge this time, a charge of hope. Earlier in the chapter, Jesus was described as a lamb, verse 1, verse 10. But here John saw him as he appeared back in chapter 1, as the majestic Son of Man, to whom was given dominion and glory and power and a kingdom, according to verse 14. In chapter 1, verse 12, it says, "Then I turned to see the voice that spoke with me. Having turned, I saw seven golden lampstands. In the midst of the seven lampstands, one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the feet, girded about the chest with a golden band." Going back to Daniel chapter 7, beginning of verse 13, "I was watching in the night, visions, behold, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom. Then all," watch this, "peoples, nations, languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away. His kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed." He wore literally a golden crown, literally a crown of victory upon his head. He carried this sharp sickle. It was a sickle of justice. And out of the earth, there would be a reaping that would take place. The angel that accompanied him came out of the temple, a symbol used in Revelation, obviously, for the church. We'll see that in the next chapter, chapter 15, verse 1. He was thus seen stepping aside from the martyrs in heaven only long enough to shout this message of really one of aggression here. Thrust in your sickle and reap. Thrust in your sickle and reap. Literally is what they were being told to do. And just as Jeremiah predicted the fall of ancient Babylon in terms of a harvest, going back to Jeremiah 51, this angel was calling for the fall of yet another Babylon. Remember, Babylon is fallen. That great city, this Babylon that we're talking about here, is Rome. And it brings us to the final voice, voice number 7, verse 17 through 20. "Another angel came out of the temple, which is in heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. Another angel came out from the altar, who had power over fire, and he cried with a loud cry to him who had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in your sharp sickle, gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And the angel thrust his sickle into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and threw it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the winepress was trampled outside the city, and blood came out of the winepress up to the horses' bridles for 1,600 furlongs." This is imagery that is being used. This seventh of seven voices come from this one final angel crying for a harvest, crying out for the harvest. And he uses that picture of harvesting grapes, and then they would throw them into the wine press, and then they would literally step into the wine press and trod the grapes, busting those grapes. And the juice would obviously then begin to flow. And that picture that is given is one, in this case, one that is like blood that came out from the wine press all the way up to the horses' bridles for a full 1,600 furlongs. Just prior to all of this, you have this picture that John sees of this angel who steps aside from those who have been martyred in heaven. And he calls for this assault on Rome. And what's interesting to me, and I think depicted here, is a message of hope. You have this particular messenger, this particular angel, who has stood by those who have been martyred this whole time, as we've read through Revelation to this point. He stood by them. He has heard their cries over and over. How long will you wait? How long till you avenge our death? As they were crying out, remember, from under the altar. And so here's the one who steps to the side of the altar under which those martyred Christians have been crying out, and now he gives this order. He gives the order, the charge, if you will, for this reaping to take place, for this harvest to take place. I think it's interesting that the word picture that is given here in prediction to all of this would have had to encourage Christians. What are they gathering from this, reading this at the end of the first century, into the second century? What are they getting from this? And then we'll look at what we might get from it as well. What are they getting from it? They get that there is a love of God for His people that, yes, will absolutely avenge their death, that has not forsaken them in any way. And for those who are being persecuted, God is on their side. And there is victory in Jesus. There is victory in the Lamb. And the angels, these messengers, are there doing God's bidding, caring for God's church, His family. Over and over we see this in this letter. And so some practical lessons for us, and then the lesson to be yours. The first one is about perseverance. All these are really about perseverance, but here's the first one. Remember that in perseverance, our salvation is conditioned upon our being faithful to God. We have to remain faithful, no matter what. In the face of any trial, in the face of every trial, we must maintain our faithfulness. Verses 1 to 5. In perseverance, we must remember, if we do not properly fear God, then we will have reason to be afraid of God. And we find that verses 6 through 11. To persevere, we need to remember the third thing. There will be a day of reckoning. And that's both a message of hope for the faithful and a message of warning for those who are unfaithful to God. Where do we fall? As Christians, we have a race to run. Thankfully, the Bible teaches we don't have to come in first. We just have to finish the race. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. Everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Hebrews 12, 1. Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. And then Galatians 5 and verse 7. Paul, writing to the churches of Galatia, you know, he's talked about in chapter 1, I marvel you are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel, but it's not another, but there are those who trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. And then in chapter 3 and verse 1, he says, O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? But then he says in chapter 5, you ran well, past tense. They ran well. There was a point in time when they were running well. And he asked them the question, who has hindered you from obeying the truth? Teaching us a couple of things. Number one, it is very well the case. In fact, chapter 5, verse 4 makes it very plain that we could be severed from Christ if we've fallen from grace, if we're not faithful. But it could be the case that we may have obeyed the gospel, and for a time, we ran well. But are we continuing to run well? That race that is set before us? Or have we given in to that weight or the sin that easily ensnares us? He says, you ran well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? Listening to these seven voices of Revelation 14 should encourage us to persevere, to be faithful. There is a message of hope here. We have victory in Jesus if we belong to Him and are faithful. Have you obeyed the gospel, and are you living it each day of your life? Can we help you? Can we encourage you? If so, come to the front while we stand, while we sing.